This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm your host, Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union. We've got 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We are part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We air on Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast on iTunes. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone and search for DC 37 State of the Union. There are now more ways to stay in touch with the union. You can follow us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check out our website, www.dc37.net. Call our hotline, 212-815-7555. And if you have any comments about our show, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. We've been doing this show for about 2.5 years now, and we try on this show to talk about as wide a range of concerns, issues, topics that affect DC 37 members and the city at large. The whole purpose of the show has been to try to make sure that the perspective of the union is heard as clearly as possible. From time to time, though, we need to talk about services provided by the union and what the union is all about. We're in the wake of a contract settlement that affected nearly 100,000 members. That is a huge part of what the union does. But the union also is protecting members' rights in the workplace. And joining us this evening is Barbara Edmonds, the DC 37 Field Operations Director. Welcome back to the show, Barbara.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here to join you.
I wanted to talk about something that is a key part of the union and a key part of workplace protection, but is not really, I believe, understood as well as it should be by members and folk, and that is the grievance process and what is a grievance. We talk inside the building, inside, you know, those of us who are involved every day in the union talk about grievances, but let's talk about it to someone who may not know what a grievance is and what the rights are of a member.
Absolutely. Let me first start by just giving some context around the way in which the unions have been able to create power through the efforts of getting laws passed, particularly to protect and create unions. And a big part of that goes back to the early 1950s, when District Council 37 was established. And I would urge folks that are here listening on the show today to go to the DC 37 website under the history section, and you'll see a little bit about the history and the executive orders that eventually created the dispute resolution processes, not only for the union dealing with different issues, but in particular to give the power of workers to resolve disputes. And that's exactly what a grievance procedure does. It is power for the worker to get issues resolved collectively and not individually. And that's what gives us power. And as I'm sure you talked about on a number of your shows regarding the attacks that unions have been facing, in particular, the most recent Janus case that was brought, and most recently, the decision that came out not in favor of the unions, but in fact, in particular, limiting the rights of us to have the power to deal with our non-members and our members and the efforts that we're pursuing.
Another effort to stack the deck against the collective.
Absolutely. Limiting our ability to collect dues for the non-members, but still having to represent them, which we are and we will continue to aggressively do. And a part of that is the critical voice and tool that we can use through the grievance procedure. And what is a grievance? A grievance under the collective bargaining agreements that we have had the ability to negotiate with the city over probably over 60 years give us the right as workers to file a grievance when there's a wrong. Examples of wrongs include things like misinterpretation or misapplication of the grievance procedure. It could be a misinterpretation or application of the rules and regulations of that specific agency. It could be what's called out-of-title work, where a member is doing work of another position, and that's inappropriate. And that's probably one of the most frequent grievances that we deal with, particularly for our clerical administrative titles and also some of our healthcare titles.
And this is as simple as, hold it, if you're going to make me do this work, you should compensate me fairly for that work, because that's often the work of a title that's above the person who's been tasked.
Absolutely. And in another area of grievances that we frequently file are what's called grievances regarding monetary issues, where a worker is inappropriately compensated, not compensated for what they have in fact been performing. And that's usually when they're undercompensated. And a good example of that is a story that was done most recently in the September issue of the PEP, highlighting that with a local 371 member, actually several 371 members who were inappropriately paid at a lower level but were doing higher level work as addiction counselors. So those are important ways that we can push back and make sure that workers are being represented properly and given the rights through a procedure that is fair and has time limits and has tools in which we can present our case and the case is investigated, and we do whatever we need to do to hopefully resolve that matter.
Let's talk for a second about what a grievance is not. And a grievance is not I really don't like my coworker, and it is not a frivolous trivial matter. It is something that is really about the worker not being properly compensated, not being assigned the right tasks. Talk a little bit more about what is not a grievance.
Absolutely. And we sometimes have challenges in the workplace, things that don't come under the rubric of what would be considered a grievance. And those are sometimes what we call gripes.
Right.
And a gripe could be a simple personality conflict between you and your colleague or your supervisor. It could be something unpleasant. You don't like the color of the walls in your office. It could be a personal grudge that you have. And that's something that is not covered under the grievance procedure in the collective bargaining agreement. It could be an EEO issue, meaning dealing with race, sex, gender, religion. And that's not to say that we will not deal with those issues. They may be appropriately referred to other authorities. It might be to the city, state, or federal human rights commission, or it might simply be something that can't be resolved because it's a gripe, a personality issue. And sometimes we have to deal with those things, hopefully in a mature and respectful way. And we try to facilitate that where we can and do whatever we need to do to move the issues ahead. But the collective bargaining grievance procedure, again, is really an important tool that we should not let let go and not think is not an important tool in the voice, particularly in the workplace that we have today. It really levels the playing field between the employee and the employer.
We're talking with DC-37's Director of Field Operations, Barbara Edmonds. We're talking about the grievance process. How does one begin the grievance process? There is an issue taking place. Something is wrong. We need to take the steps to resolve it. What's the first step?
Well, the first step is to contact your union rep. If you feel that there has been some type of action that was inappropriately taken, you should be contacting your union representative or your local president. And there are several ways to do that. And once that happens, the rep will then pursue an investigation. And as we like to say in all of our important settings when we're dealing with things, we have to do the 4 W's and the 1 H. We try to investigate first, what is the issue? When did it happen? Where did it happen? How did it happen? All of the details that will help us build a case. And most importantly, at the very outset, determining if, in fact, that issue is covered under the grievance procedure.
And the best way for someone to find out who their rep is?
The best way to do that is, most importantly, to One, we urge you to go to your union meeting because we try to and we do our best in informing you. And I know you mentioned earlier the website and the phone numbers. But what I can do is share with you the phone numbers so the audience can at least take that down and you can contact these individuals. We have six divisions, and these are the servicing divisions that handle each of the locals' issues and representation matters. So I could run through those phone numbers if you'd like. Well, if we start with our white-collar division, which generally represents our Culturals, Library, and Authority represented members, if you feel you're covered in that area, you should contact 212-815-1060. That's 212-815-1060.
Again, if you're working at a cultural institution.
In a cultural institution, a library, the City University of New York, and some of our other authorities. The other areas that you can call are for our folks that are serving in blue-collar trades titles. You should contact this number. It's 212-815-1010. And I'll repeat it again. It's 212-815-1010. For our members that are serving in schools in paraprofessional titles, cooks, paraprofessional school lunch workers, school aides, guards, you should contact this number, which is 212-815-1050. That's 212-815-1050. Three more sets of numbers. Got a lot of numbers here.
Okay.
Our professionals division, which covers our social services, accounting, and related titles, you can contact this number, which is 212-815-1040. That's 212-815-1040. And for our healthcare workers, primarily in Local 420, Local 768, Local 1189, and Local 436, which are the folks that work and are very dedicated healthcare workers in our public hospital systems, the Department of Health, our psychologists, our nurses' aides, you should contact 212-815-1030. That's 212-815-1030. And last but not least, our clerical administrative titles that work in the city agencies, for instance, the Department of Health, the Parks Department, and various other city mayoral agencies, you can contact 212-815-1020. That's 212-815-1020. And lastly, I would say if all else fails, we will refer you to the appropriate division. And you can always check the DC37 website, post on Facebook, and we are very, very good at making sure that we follow up and direct you to the individuals that you need to talk to resolve these issues and to lead you in the right direction.
We're talking with DC-37's Director of Field Operations, Barbara Edmonds. Okay, so how long does the process take after you've reached out to your shop steward, you've talked to the person about what the issue is? How long does the average grievance take to resolve? Or is there an average grievance?
You know, it depends on the issue. We generally like to do whatever we can to resolve the issues at the initial steps. There are usually four steps, and the last step being arbitration, which is generally where you don't want to go because at arbitration, it is a third party, a neutral party that's going to resolve that issue. And the union takes the ability and the right to determine if a case needs to go to arbitration in consultation with our general counsel. But generally, there are three initial steps. At the first step, there's usually a initial discussion once the grievance is filed with the representative from management from that particular agency's labor relations office. And generally, at that first step, the goal is to see, one, if we can hopefully get this resolved. And that's really what you want to try
Absolutely.
To do, because Absolutely. It's going to take time. Generally, the contract speaks to, in most of our collective bargaining agreements, you have up to 120 days to file a grievance. So if that's something that's been recurring, let's say it happened prior to 120 days, but you have been doing out-of-title work for the last year, we can try to argue that that has been happening and we will file the grievance. If it's a misapplication of a salary issue, we'll again go through that process and document it. The more information we have, particularly with cases like time and leave, where
more specifics.
Allegations around being unfairly compensated, the easier generally it is to resolve the grievance. Obviously, the outlier is having a good management labor relations representative on the other side that's going to understand and work with us. But if we can't, we are going to fully represent that member and make sure that they have their day in court.
Okay. We're running out of time. You're going to come back and we're going to talk some more about any other topic that you want to talk about, because this was a very... We need to talk bread and butter to our members about how they can better themselves in the workplace. And this was a very, I think, important 15 minutes to have on this show.
Thank you so much. And I'm really excited and looking forward because, as I said, the power of the union lies in knowing and understanding the rights you have. And I would urge your listeners who are members and want to become more engaged and learn more about the grievance process and about the important history of the union and what we need to do to continue to build our unions to reach out to us. We have classes for shop stewards. They can contact our DC-37 Education Fund, and they can simply call the numbers that I already talked about, because this is about building our union, building power, and that equals building the community.
And if someone thinks they want to become a shop steward, what's the best way to do that?
The best way to do that is to contact our DC-37 Education Fund for training. If they're interested in becoming a shop steward in particular, they should contact those numbers that I called and mentioned earlier in the call, or they can simply go on the DC-37 website or Facebook page and contact through that process.
Barbara Edmonds, DC-37, Director of Field Operations, thank you very much, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the DC-37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. We're talking now with Local 768 President Fitz Reed, who's in the studio with us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you kindly. How are you? Good morning.
It's good to be talking to you. Listen, the issue here, you represent the medico-legal investigators.
Right, at the OCME.
At the Office of the Medical Examiner.
Right.
And these are folks who, what do they do?
The OCME is charged with investigating all suspected death.
Okay.
Right. And the medical legal investigators are the field professionals that go out there to investigate, see what's happening, and to interact with the family, interact with the doctors, the medical practitioners.
And there is now an issue, as I understand it. There was an article in the chief newspaper
yes,
that I read
about 3 weeks ago.
And that article said that clericals are now being used to make calls about, to make decisions about whether autopsies are necessary instead of the medical legal investigators who are trained to make these kinds of determinations.
Correct. So normally, if you go to a medical practitioner, they have someone, the clerical people that triage, you take information, but then you see the doctor. In this instant, when the clerical take the information, they turn you away, or they determine whether you're going to see the professional or not.
Okay.
So the OCME, they have doctors who does the autopsies and these things, but they are particular groups that are they are required to examine. And the facilities were over 100 years old. So our people, the medical legal investigators, go out there once there is a report. And, you know, unfortunately, we have a lot of deaths in New York City.
A lot of people die.
Yeah, because you have a lot of homeless. So you have to go out there and see what's really going on. These are the people that goes out there. If it's in an hospital, if they are overdose or something that should not have happened, right? And I give you a quick example. If somebody dies from an immediate cause, it may be caused from something earlier. Somebody may got a gunshot wound, and the body parts get ruptured afterwards. So if the doctor tell you the person died from this, you need somebody to say, okay, died from this, but what could have contributed to it? And then you get to find out that it was a criminal act. And in that case, we are protecting everybody.
So the doctor is determining the cause, but the medical legal investigator helps determine some of the circumstances around that death.
Around that. And therefore, you need a professional. Because, look, it has to deal with a criminal situation. You may have somebody who is a serial, I don't want to kill her, out there. And you can catch a person by this, right? So there were a couple of cases whereby people were turned away. And the police had to say, look, what's going on?
And it was, go ahead.
Yeah, and what's going on? And therefore, the chief medical examiner's office had to say, no, the body has to come in. So this is really what's going on. And I suspect it's a result of financial problem. So they are downgrading, and I don't want to belabor the point. Our people are getting two-thirds of what the average person, the average physician assistant get. They get 80,000 compared to 120,000. And because of that, nobody takes a job. So if you have 80,000, you're trying to find out what title can get paid for that, instead of upgrading the pay so you get the level that you need. So this turnover of over 15% every year. It's caused through low paid, and you're really downgrading the job now. They just close sites in the Bronx and over Staten Island, and it's really creating pressure in the city.
Closing sites, when you say they're closing sites, because they're not taking bodies there?
No, there were facilities in the location.
Okay.
In the boroughs. And they close that, you know, in order to concentrate, and the funding is not there. And I'll tell you why. The office deals with debt. They deal with unfortunate people, homeless people, and therefore they do not get the normal praise that the police and the fire department get. Take like 9/11. These are the people who went out there and took care of the 3,000 bodies. Take care of the airline collapse over in Far Rockaway. These are the people who deal with it. The Appleland disaster. These are the people who go out there. They get 20 bodies that they have to deal with every day. These are dead. Sometimes you have somebody die homeless, and it's only because of hoarders why somebody, you know, and these are the people who go out there and deal with that.
So basically we're saying that there needs to be an upgrading of this position, which is a tough position, which requires a certain amount of training, and which currently the city is not paying competitive rates, and so there is a constant turnover, and the people who are doing the job are overworked.
Right.
Okay.
Precisely. You get the point.
They're
assigning it to people who are not capable because of training and experience.
So they're giving some of the assignments that the medical legal investigators should be handling, they're giving some of that work to clericals who are in over their heads.
Right, and they're saying that it's becoming more efficient. It's bound to become more efficient because they're not getting They're not giving the services that they need.
And how long has this issue been going? How long has this been a problem with this group of medical legal investigators? Because they do. This is very, you know, this is the stuff that they make television shows about. And this is the stuff that it's clearly the public has some idea that they've seen this work on TV and elsewhere. And they may have a, we were just talking about what the amount of work that is involved. If they're being held with one hand tied around their back because of how much work there is and how little they're being compensated for it, it's a losing proposition unless we fix this.
And you want to give credit to the department, to the agency, because they do a lot of work. But there's also the criminalists, you know, so there are different that does DNA investigation, police find, you know, weapons and these sorts of things. So they, and they're all under financial problem. So the city, we as a city, the mayor, we have to make sure that these people get the credit that they deserve for this, the tremendous work that they are doing. They are unrecognized, unsung heroes of 9/11, unsung heroes in the city.
And we're talking with Fitz Reed. He is the head of Local 768. How many members in your local?
We have 4,000 members.
And they're in, again, they're working throughout the Office of the Medical Examiner.
Right.
They're working throughout health and hospitals.
Right.
And some of the other titles that are involved?
Well, in my local?
Yes.
We have social workers, physician assistant, the therapists in the hospital, some lower-level clerical people, right? Those are, you know, inspectors all over the place. Public health inspectors, inspectors in consumer affairs.
And those are very important folks.
They are all important. I
mean, they're very important.
For
folks.
Public health.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I tell you, this, public health is critical because, you know, with this continuous traveling, right, incoming and going, if something breaks out, you need people to be there to pick it up, Legionnaires diseases and all of these things, West Nile, you have to pick it up early. So the Office of the Chief Medical Investigator is critical to identify these sort of a thing early.
And we're going to be we're going to continue to talk about this issue of medical legal investigators and the need to properly compensate them and the need for the proper number of them.
Right, in numbers.
And
right.
I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you kindly. And it's all my pleasure.
And we will have you back soon, sir.
God's bless. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That's just about all the time we have on the show today. I want to thank my guests, Director of Field Operations for DC 37, Barbara Edmonds, and Local 768, President Fitz Reed. Before we go, a couple of announcements. Members, you can help elect the union's endorsed candidates by volunteering to help get out the vote on Election Day, Tuesday, November 6th. For more information, call 212-815-1550. And if you want to learn about purchasing your first home or refinancing, attend the Municipal Employees Housing Program's seminar on Thursday, October 25th at 5:30 p.m. at Union Headquarters. To pre-register, call 212-815-1814. If you have any comments about anything you heard on this or any of our shows, please give us drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. The producer is Rudy Orozco. The engineer is Andrea Minocchio. I'm Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.